You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. We've got a good broadcast for you tonight, folks. Make sure, as always, that you have pen and paper by your side. Also, you might want to stand up and stretch a little bit. We're going to take a little test here. I pulled some records from the record library of 98.5 FM here in Eager. And they're the slowest ones that I could find. And what I'm going to do is sort of put you through a little physical test. See, a lot of you think you're healthy and you're really not. And you're going to find out now, and you can't not take this test. If you do, everybody sitting in your living room is going to know is going to know that you're wimping out and that you probably couldn't do it. What you got to do is find the one you love and dance every dance to every music that you hear during the next 2 hours. If you can do it and you have a great time, and at the end of the 2 hours, you're not being loaded into an ambulance and carted off to the hospital, then you pass the test. If you can't dance with the one you love with every song that we play tonight during this broadcast, then you need to call 1-888-403-2405. That's 1-888-403-2405. Write that number down. You're going to find out during the next 2 hours how bad your health really is. Some of you, I know, are going to have to call a doctor just because you got up off the couch. And we know that's true for some of you, you know, and it's kind of funny. So sit back and laugh with us and have a good time. If you have problems just getting off the couch, you need to call 1-888-403-2405, probably about 30 years ago, okay? But since you can't call them 30 years ago, call them right now, 1-888-403-2405. Now, if you make it all the way through these 2 hours and you can dance on every piece of music that we play, and remember, I picked out all the slow ones, folks. All the slow ones. So it's going to be a piece of cake, you know, if you're in any kind of good health. If you can get through and dance every single one of them with the one you love tonight during this broadcast, you're in excellent health. And to stay that way, to stay in excellent health, you need to call 1-888-403-2405. Now, if you can't dance every dance all the way through, and I'm going to space them so you've got breathing time, you know, to get your breath back and get it back together. If you can't make it through every dance through the next 2 hours, your health is pretty bad, I got to tell you. And you need to call 1-888-403-2405 and ask for the information pack. Okay? Make sure that you do that, folks. And coming up right now is going to be the very first test. So get the one you love right now. Get her in your arms or get him in your arms, whichever the case may be. And are you ready? Okay, folks. Here. Where? Oh, yes. Here we go.
Do for you now a tune entitled Shamalama Ding Dong. So hit it.
Now take it easy and don't break anything.
Come to my side now. my sugar daddy. And our love, this love we share, is stronger than the other. No one else can compare. Stronger than the highest mountain and the deepest sea. Hey, just put the jam-a-lama, baby.
Well, I see some of you passed the test. Some of you are still on the couch. There's a lot more to go. You all have your opportunity if you're a little bashful at first. Don't be. Don't be. People are standing up and dancing to this music all across the country to take the test. And you've got to take the test. And it doesn't matter whether you pass it or fail it. You need to call 1-888-403-2405. Because if you fail it, you're not going to live very long. If you pass it and you want to stay living and stay as healthy as you are now, you need to call 1-888-403-2405. And now, folks, off we go to the moon with Ron Howell. Conference, 1997.
That was a lot of fun with Jeff on the radio. And I bet you that there's a lot of people out there that really enjoyed that. What you're going to hear now is going to be extremely interesting. You've heard me talk about the Apollo moon shots and the Apollo mission and the Apollo program and all that kind of stuff on many broadcasts. And you've seen all of the NASA footage of that and the special programming on TV of the Apollo program. And the next speaker has done a lot of research on this and put together the results of what he's discovered. And he's going to share that with us for the next 2 hours. He's also a good friend and a major contributor to our effort. This microphone up here is one that he gave us that we can travel with. It has incredible quality because we can't travel with the two other microphones that he gave us because they're so fragile and they were made back in the 20s and 30s. And they're the best microphones ever made. You can't duplicate it with solid-state technology. And that's what makes the Hour of Time sound so great. So his name is Ron Howell. He's standing right here. And he's put together the results of his research in the Apollo program and the Apollo moonshots. And he's going to give you the results of that over the next 2 hours. I think you're going to find it extremely interesting. Regardless of what you may believe about what happened, you're going to find what he's going to tell you interesting. So pay attention, take notes, and I don't know if he's going to take questions, but if he does, please hold your questions until the end of his presentation so that he can get all the way through it. And if you can poke holes in this, that's fine. I pretty much think I know what he's going to say, and I think I pretty much agree with him. But Mr. Ron Howell.
Thank you, Bill. Well, with a nice introduction like that, I don't want to fall flat on my face, so let's get to it here. This outline for my presentation is called Did NASA Fool America? Now, I have to tell you, you don't have to believe what I say. If I were to tell you that we didn't go to the moon, I wouldn't expect you to believe it, but you know that. You deal with intelligence every day, and you know you have to treat it as such. If it's evidence, you have to handle it for what it is. If you agree with it or not, that comes later. Even if I were to tell you that I went to the moon myself, you couldn't accept that, you'd have to look at it as secondhand information, wouldn't you? Okay, now, we are going to discuss facts, and we want to get to the truth, because I appreciate truth. Everything that deals with freedom, you know, you have everything to do with truth. Now, let me see here. I'm going by my little outline. Okay, this is an experience I had. When I was in high school, I can remember the Apollo Project was going on because I was a senior in 69. I remember seeing the footage. And my feeling at the time, you know, I was a sheeple. I was young, and I was young and impressionable. When I saw all these moon astronauts, I knew, see, when you're in the vacuum of space, you know that death is right outside of you. Right outside of your suit is a pure hard vacuum. When pilots are inside of an airplane, you know, they're in a pressurized cockpit besides being in a pressure suit. So being outside of the capsule, being on the moon, I knew at that time that it was very dangerous. And my impression was that these men were very joyful, they were happy, they were jumping around, right? And my thought was that these men must be awfully brave, knowing that they may die at any minute, that they're going through, I mean, that they're entertaining these thoughts, and they figure, what the heck, we're going to live this up while we do it. I was thinking that, or it could be that it was fake. And kind of, I thought it was just too dangerous to be acting that way. And, you know, I brought this up in school, and, you know, the teachers, the kids, you know, they put that down. So I let it go for a long time, but I always had it in the back of my mind. Then about the time when I was getting older, I knew there was trouble in the country. I acquired a shortwave set. I instinctively knew that shortwave would be what I'd want to look for. I mean, I'd want to search the dial. I thought, should I say the truth? You know, I thought I'd be hearing information from outside of the country. I never thought it'd be coming from within. And when I heard, you know, all these shows, I was like, ooh, knocked out. And then, you know, 9 o'clock Pacific time, you know, that old siren came on, and boy, I knew that was something. So I really listened to him. I know I'm not used to this, so I got to get used to laughing at myself. It's not a problem. I'm just getting used to it here. So listening to the show, I remember one episode where he was talking about the astronauts on the moon in 1/6 gravity.
Test number 2, coming up, ladies and gentlemen, right now. Get the one you love and get ready, because here we go. Now, don't think out on me. You got to take every one of these tests for the entire length of this broadcast. And remember, I picked all the slow ones, folks. I know there's some of you out there that are, you know, getting kind of crotchety.
You shake my nerves and you rattle my brain. You got your love, drives a man insane. You broke my will, but what a thrill. It's a great ball of fire. I let your love fall apart of the fire. You came along and woo, now honey. I changed my mind, the blood of fire. It's a great ball of fire. Kiss me, baby. Feel good. Hold me, baby. Well, I want to love you like I love the shoe. You're fine. So kind. I could just swirl at your mind. I keep my nails on and I twiddle my thumb. I'm real on everybody, so it's fun. Come on, baby. It drives me crazy. It's just great balls of fire. Oh, baby.
good. You're fine. So kind.
Okay, folks. Now, if you pass the test and you want to stay in this good kind of health that you've got right now, call 1-888-403-2405 and order your info pack. And if you didn't pass the test, if you didn't make it through that dance, or you didn't make it off the couch before they lock you in the ambulance and speed you away, call for a portable phone to take with you so that you can call 1-888-403-2405. Do it right now, or you might forget. Or, oh, heaven help you if you don't.
And seeing that show, it was like, hey, I was thinking this a long time ago, and here he's talking about it. I felt somewhat empowered that my thoughts weren't so off base. Listening to his program, and shortly after that, maybe a year or two, he came out with this book, NASA Mooned America, by a man named Renee. I still don't know if that's his real name or his last name or what. I obtained his phone number before I was able to do this. I haven't been able to talk with him yet. So a lot of my material is going to be based on this. And I know a lot of you people out there have it already because in my short acquaintance with you, many of you have it. But I don't plan to do a book report on this. When I obtained this book, it was so enlightening. It inspired me to hit the books myself and see if I could back it up, see if I could poke holes in it, substantiate it. It was something that just made me really want to study. So that's what I've been doing. And also, I've got this other publication, this book he published called The Last Skeptic of Science. The book NASA tried to stop, and it's a kind of a collage of different papers that are associated with subjects like this and other things we'll be referring to. So, let me just look at my list here. I've got so many things to talk about. I had to write in an outline to get it. I'm being just a little nervous, it's hard to read it. Okay. When I was doing research, you know, I went to the old Popular Science. Has anyone ever seen one of these or seen the Popular Science? Okay. Well, I've seen it a lot. In fact, I've seen it on TV shows. I remember one episode of Heart to Heart that was right there in the library. I remember saying, "Yeah, that's the one I've got." So I checked it out. And I found this set at a swap meet because the set that my father bought me years ago was worn and tattered. When I was a kid, I read all these books. I was always interested in how things work. So I saw this set at a swap meet and I bought it for $10, brand new, sealed and everything. So if I can tell you here, okay. One of the things with the moon, I wanted to get some information on the moon because many people take the moon for granted. We have ideas about it, but as you'll see when I show you these demonstrations, you'll be knocked out because it has nothing to do with what you think. Now, you could find the distance from the Earth to the moon, of course, in these volumes, but I just want to take a chance and see if anyone has an idea or how many people in general have an idea how far it is to the moon. Any thoughts?
249,000.
Okay, well, see, I was afraid of that. These people are really... Well, okay, let's go to the next step. Do you know how they found out how far away it is?
They used, amateur radio did it by radar, I think, the first time.
Okay, years ago, before radio, how do you suppose they did it? They knew how far the moon was away way back when they built the pyramids. Now, you think about that. How did they do it? I'll show you. I wish I had a big blackboard here because it's a good crutch. I don't have to fool with things. But generally, the Earth is over here and the moon here. Okay, well, how they determine how far away this moon is from the Earth is they know two locations on the Earth, the distance, not the circumference, but the distance through. Well, that's a strong shock here. Okay, the distance through the Earth from this point to here. See, they figure that distance, and then to the moon here, you have a triangle. So if they know the distance from here to here, and they measure these angles, they can determine the distance from here to there, to the middle. Right, okay, and of course the reverse works too. If you want to know the diameter of the moon, what you do is you know your distance, then you calculate points where the angle is, where their angle is, and that from this part of the Earth, you would measure a triangle this way. And then, of course, you know the angle of the triangle on this side, and that tells you the diameter there. So is that clear? We understand? Yeah. Okay, so the diameter of the moon is 2,116 miles. The diameter of the Earth is 7,927 miles. Okay, now those facts are in this book, and they're there for all of us to read. Okay, the question is, using these pieces here, how far this softball is roughly the size of the moon, how far away in your mind's eye are we from this Earth? Let me hear. I especially got this globe here for this demonstration. I like it because I can take it out of there. It was nice to have one here, but it spins and makes it awkward. So imagine now we're out in space. Here's your Earth, and here's your moon. Now I'm going to ask a couple of you out there, how far do you think it is? And we got a smarty here. Maybe someone else didn't hear it. Any other thoughts? Any other? So he said 25 times. 25 times what?
125 times the diameter of the Earth. Because the Earth is 2,000 miles, and you said the Earth is 250,000 miles away from the moon. So 2,000 to 250,000 is roughly 125 times.
Well, your idea of finding it is right, but I think it's wrong, because what you do is you divide 7,927 into 239,000, which is the average, because it's supposed to be an elliptical orbit. So just taking an average, that goes 30 times. So when you talk through your moon, say you go out there and you hold that. Okay, you see that?
Wow.
Now, there's a way that I can prove this. If I had a long pole, I went to that baseball, and I was strong enough to hold it. And if the moon was in this vicinity, you hold that baseball up to that moon, and it's going to be the same size as the moon. So it shows that the scale is correct. Is that understood? Okay, now this is the mind blower. Okay, now this is a fact. If they really went to the moon, this is what they would have had to do. See, it's either one of two things. It's a great accomplishment, because imagine, that moon isn't stationary. That's a moving target. And you have your I'm not telling you how far off that's yet, but it's coming off this globe, hitting a moving target. And it has to hit that target at right angles, precisely to go around it. Because if you miss it, there's no second chance. This is gone, right? And if that's that agreeable, okay, you can bring that moon back. Okay, now we know what they claim to have done. What are they doing today? We know about the shuttle project. We know about putting satellites in orbit, things like that. Okay, does anyone know now how high a shuttle usually flies?
Test number three, folks. Grab the one you love and spin around the floor. Oh, by the way, enjoy the music. This is what they hear in the Round Valley all the time on 98.5 FM. My darling, I need you to call my own and never do wrong, to hold in mind your little hand. I know too soon that all is so grand. Please hold my hand. Okay, folks, time to call 1-888-403-2405. Oh, see, I'm dancing here, too, in the studio. I got it out before I lost my breath. 1-888-403-2405.
Yeah, I know you're sharp out there. What is it?
25 miles, maybe?
Well, it's a little more than that. It's 300 miles. 300 miles, they say. You know, we don't know. They say that. Okay, where do you suppose 300 miles off of this? It shouldn't take too hard to think of it. Right. Less than a quarter of an inch off this globe. And you can find that out because you divide 12 into 7,000 927, you get 660 miles to the inch. And if they say they go up 300 miles, that's less than a half an inch, isn't it? So here you go, that moon's out there, here's the Earth. And now we can prove this, because once you know that, this is a standard. See, this is a reference. Now, the way I look at it is when you look at those pictures they claim that they did on outer space, what you do is you put your eye right close to that bulb, and you match the horizon, the curvature of the Earth, to what they said. And if it matches, it's going to be at the scale. If it's not, it's way off. So here's an example. I've seen many, many times where they're shooting off the Atlas rocket, and you see these beautiful pictures of the stages dropping off with fire around them, and you say, oh man, look at that. Okay, well, when you see those pictures, you're seeing the Earth from about a distance like this. You see that curvature of the Earth like this, with those stages dropping off. Okay, now you look at that reference point from about here to here, you know, you're talking about this far. That's further than the United States. That's over 3,000 miles. So if they're dropping off first and second stages 3,000 miles off when they claim it's under 100 miles, there's something wrong with the photograph. So, am I right? There's nothing else it could be, because this is a standard. Okay, one of the things that they did back in July 1st, 1957 to December 31st, 1958 was called the International Geophysical Year, the IGY. You've probably heard of that if you went to college or something. It's UN stuff. They gathered all the scientists together. They are drilling and poking and measuring everything that they could to establish the old doctrine or the old measurement that they used to thought was right. Okay, they checked out, you know, this geometry which we had before. They had devices that were called a Markowitz dual rate moon camera and a Dijon astrolabe, and those were devices similar to sextants and things that they attached to telescopes to accurately measure these distances for the moon. And that was supposedly for the upcoming moon project. So in a way, they really confirmed the old thing, because really we know that man was smart all along. It wasn't this gradual evolution that they were cavemen or something. I mean, it's obvious the Egyptians, you know, they were very smart with pyramids. They say that they don't know how they made them even to this day, do they not? And I believe with my, my way of exposing this is going to show that man made them. It's not something from somewhere else. And we'll get into that later. Okay, but now I was reading this encyclopedia over the years. It's in volume one, by the way, on page 237. The illustration I have never been able to find anywhere else, and I've been looking. Okay, this illustration here is like a graph or a scale that shows the different layers of the atmosphere. And it's interesting to note in one book I was reading that the breathable air that we breathe to this size of a globe is less than the thickness of the coating that they put on this. In the old days it said varnish, but this is a newer one that probably has some kind of poly something on it. But the air that we breathe on this globe here is actually thinner than this coating.
So we're talking about these layers. So if I may, what I'll do is I'll get this erased and I'll draw. If you're taking notes of stuff, you might want to do this because it's leading up to a point that's very vital understanding this. If you take your paper long ways like this and you draw a line for a horizon, you know, I never knew until just a few months ago where that word came from, Horus rising, but on this horizon. I know now. Okay, let me explain it this way first. In the old books, so you have to understand that all these things, airplanes, jets, rockets, this all happened within 50, 60 years. So this is really new stuff. When we talk about these layers, in the old books, there is only four layers. But just before they went to the moon here, this was published in 1970, so I'm sure that the type was set and by a committee and everything, when they made these books, this information is not to the minute 1970, but obviously before they went to the moon, it exposes other layers that they defined. And that's the ones I'm going to show you tonight. If you have your paper ready, put this line here. On the very first layer, they call that the troposphere. So we'll put that one right here. Now the troposphere, we could define that. Well, I could more or less tell you, or I could read it from the book.
Blackboard.
Oh, thank you. Well, this is a real honor and a privilege. Man, so much time. He's helping me tonight. Thank you, Jill. Okay, the troposphere is defined as from 0 to 7 miles high. So from this area here to here, this is the zone we're talking about. Now, I'll just read a little bit from the book because, I could explain it just better, get it right from here. The troposphere is 0 to 7 miles up. The troposphere is the air which all human beings usually have intimate contact, since it is the very stuff we breathe, and it is also the seat of weather and climate. The troposphere is the densest part of the atmosphere. The air pressure drops with increasing altitude, and we have already pointed this out, that there is more water vapor and carbon dioxide in the troposphere than any other layer. And it goes on and on, but basically what it's saying is that the air that we breathe is in this layer here. And the next layer, which we're concerned with, maybe, I know you, there's a lot of smart people out here. What do you suppose it is? You know what it's called, anybody? I heard one. Stratosphere, correct. Okay, I'll define that one now as being 7 to 29 miles. Another line.
Does that mean it fluctuates?
No. What I mean from 7 to 29 miles.
7 miles high is 29.
Right. It starts at 7 miles high, and then it goes to 29 miles. You know, here's something I couldn't understand. They here, even in the book, they say there's no fine line between the layers. So don't ask me why they call it 29 miles when it could easily be 30. I'm just telling you what it says here, and I don't know what their reasoning is, but they say it can vary a couple miles. There's no hard line as to where it crosses. But that's the definition from the textbook that we have. Let me go now to the stratosphere, what this consists of. The stratosphere is less dense than the underlying troposphere. It contains much the same gases, except there is less water vapor. The altitude of 15 miles, much ozone is concentrated, which we know the story about the ozone pretty well by listening to the Hour of Time. It absorbs most of the ultraviolet radiation from the sun and thus is heated. From a low of minus 60 Celsius at 7 miles, the stratospheric temperature rises slowly up to the base of the underlying mesosphere at about 29 miles. The temperature of the stratosphere increases in the summer. Well, I think of something else, but I want to see. Well, it's a lot of reading, but the point I want to make is that in the stratosphere, the temperature drops. From here, the higher up you go, it gets colder. And isn't this what we understand? Because when we look at the old World War II movies and see the B-17s flying high, they're wearing those neat leather jackets, I like, you know, and they're way up there and they're cold, right? Well, that's how it was. But I'm afraid that gives people the illusion that the higher up you go, it keeps getting cold. Does anyone in here that has read the NASA Moon America book know what I'm coming to or understand what I'm getting at? There's a hand back there.
In our concept of temperature, you have to have density molecules. When you don't have molecules, the temperature doesn't mean anything.
That's a good point. That's going to come later. But what I mean for right now is... Right, there we go. Doing okay? Oh, okay.
No, I didn't want to... Let's go off the
on a bee farm in Missouri, and like everybody,
up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history is practical math. Working your fingers right down to the bone. The guy behind you won't leave you alone. Ring, ring goes the bell. The cook in the lunchroom ready to sell. You're lucky if you can find a seat. You're fortunate if you have time to eat. Back in the classroom, open your book. Even the teachers don't know I mean you look. Rolls around, you finally lay your burden down. Close up your book, get out of your seat. Down the halls and into the street. Up to the corner and round the bend. Right to the tube, don't you go in. Drop the coin right into the slot. You've got to hear something that's really hot. With the one you love, you make a romance. All day long you've been wanting to dance. Feeling the music from head to toe. Round and round and round you go. Into the slot. You gotta hit something that's really hot. With the one you love, you're making romance. All day long you've been wanting to dance. Feeling the music from head to toe. Round and round and round you go. Hail, hail, rock and roll. You've never been from the days of old. Long live rock and roll. The drums loud and bold. Rock, rock, rock and roll. And feeling it there, body and soul.
Okay, folks, if you feel that all this exercise is getting to you, call 1-888-403-2405. Ask for Dr. Wallach's information pack. That's 1-888-403-2405. Do it right now.
Okay, the next layer is the mesosphere. 29 miles it starts to 48 miles high. So that's your third layer. Now let's get to what the mesosphere is, how they define that.
From 29 to what? 48.
Yeah, well, here it's 49, but that's close enough. Oh, no, you're right, 48. Maybe it's because I'm a little nervous, what do you think?
That's okay.
Okay.
You've already told us it should be easy.
Right. Okay, the composition of the mesosphere is not unlike that of the stratosphere. The gases are less dense, of course. Carbon dioxide and water vapor are of little importance. The mesosphere has a layer of ionized or electrified air, the so-called D layer, extending 30 to 50 miles above the Earth. It is caused by the action of solar ultraviolet on the air molecules and is charged with electrons. Ozone also occurs in the mesosphere, where it is formed by the action of solar, ultraviolet, and X-rays on oxygen. The temperature from the low of 60 Celsius up to 7 miles in the stratosphere rises to 0 centigrade and altitude of 30 miles. Then it drops to about minus 90 at about 50 miles above the Earth, the surface of the Earth. So you see, in the mesosphere, it's starting to vary. Now, like I said before, in the older books, they were identifying that layer as being called only the ionosphere. When, if you understand anything about it, if the ionosphere is anywhere from the top of the stratosphere all the way up to a different degree, you know, depending on what frequency you're transmitting at, they can determine how high or at what density level it bounced back or ricocheted off. And that changes through the year, depending on weather, temperature. You know, that's why when we try to listen to Bill on shortwave, sometimes it sounds great and other times we can't get it. And that's why. Now here, they also define these other layers of the ionosphere, the D layer, E layer, F1 layer, F2 layers. So, you know, they have it pretty well figured out at what frequency, you know, it hops the best. Okay, now we're getting to the one that's really important. These lights here makes it hard to read. Okay, maybe I should put it on this board first. What do you suppose the name of it is? It's totally about what we're getting at. It's called, pardon me?
Troposphere.
No, that was the first one.
That's the ionosphere.
Well, remember that, maybe I should clarify, that the ionosphere was the old definition.
Oh.
As they were getting more knowledge about radio and radar and whatnot, they defined the different layers. And this layer they named, we'll get to that one. The thermosphere. You got it. He knows what's happening here. Okay, when I saw that, the first thing that came to my mind, thermosphere, what are we talking about? I thought it was getting colder. And usually when they say thermo, they're not referring to the cold part of heat. They're referring to a rise in temperature. So I knew I was investigating, I was on the right track here. The next one, which is the thermosphere, is defined
has been from 48 miles high starting to 250 miles here. Okay, wait till you hear this definition. There's no way they could teach this today. There is a wide range of temperature in the thermosphere, from a low of about minus 90 centigrade at 50 miles altitude, the temperature rises to several thousand degrees at 300 miles and higher into the exosphere. And let me just say that one more time. The temperature raises to several thousand degrees. Okay, how much is several thousand? They didn't say what it is, but yeah. Right, I think of several as at least more than two. And I think it could be as high as four or five, couldn't it? I mean, we're talking of a several. So that's what it says here. And now I'll be finished.
Wow.
It's not true.
It
says into the exosphere. A great deal of this intense heat, if not all of it, is due to the fierce solar energy and other kinds of radiation bombarding the atmosphere at those immense heights. The air is too thin here to offer much resistance, and there are no clouds to shield it from the constant onslaught. So there it is, right there. What are they saying? Now, it's interesting to know, just a coincidence, that in the same volume, here in the back, they're talking about the Bessemer steel process. Now, if you read what that is, it's a blast furnace of only 2,000 degrees at 300 miles an hour can take iron ore and melt it into steel. So here, with the same definition found in this book, how is it that the Apollo space capsule traversed these layers and came back in one piece without them being a molten piece of lead or something?
This is what I was trying to tell you on the broadcast with this, when I said it couldn't possibly even go through this radiation of space.
We got the van out. No, that's what we're getting
through. I think we've been snookers.
Okay.
And this is just the beginning.
Right. Day one. In a couple minutes, I can call you from that. Okay. Thank you very much.
What are you going to
try to get? Okay, now I think it was mentioned. How can I phrase it? Okay, temperature is what? What is temperature? Temperature is the attribute. What does temperature have to be associated with? It has to be associated with matter.
Molecules.
Okay. If you have matter, it doesn't matter what it is, solid, liquid, or gas, you have molecules of stuff. And heat is the acceleration of those molecules. When it's cold, it's going slow, okay? So, knowing that, what do you think the definition, the temperature of space is? See, because when they went there, when they were on the moon, supposedly, they were sitting on the moon. They said they were sleeping, but they couldn't sleep because it was too cold. That's just something. So, knowing what you know of what heat is, or what the temperature is, and knowing what space is, what is the temperature of space? Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Whether it's in the shadow or in the sun.
Right. Space wouldn't have a temperature.
Right.
Because space is a vacuum and it's a lack of matter.
Right.
And we can prove that. The thermos bottle is one right there.
how do they make a thermos bottle? There's really two bottles in one. They evacuate the air in between. They put either hot or cold liquid inside, and not having the matter to trans through, or I should say penetrate, but there's I should have mentioned there are three ways of conducting heat. There's convection, conduction, and radiation. So how to make a thermos bottle to prevent radiation, they make it a mirror inside, nice and shiny. So when the heat goes out, it tends to reflect it back in. And the conduction and the convection is out because there's no way for that to happen through the thermos bottle. So what I'm trying to get at is space itself doesn't have a temperature, but anything that's in space will have the temperature. Okay, what they had to do is because of the heat and the cold, when the Apollo craft was heading out to that moon out there, that it had to do that Dutch roll, they called it. Okay, and their logic to us was that, well, it's hot on this side, it's rolling over into the cold to cool off, to go back into the hot again. See, so they want us to believe that's what they did, and think of the navigation problems they would have with this, because, you know, they had primitive computers back in those days, and to go somewhere for a destination and to compensate for that roll all the time, well, we know it was never necessary because of the situation with the heat. Well, what really happened is, like it was brought out in the NASA Moon to America book, Linnea used the illustration, you've got a hot dog on the barbecue. It's in the heat, it doesn't matter how fast you turn it, it's going to cook it all the way through. This is a good book. I've read it 12 times, and I still don't have everything memorized. This follow-up one here, you know, well, I think it came first, really, The Last Skeptic of Science. If you have any inclination to these, these thoughts like this, it's a good read, because it crashes every major theory. And like, remember, a theory is not a fact. It's supposed to be an idea based on facts. So that gives you latitude that maybe that theory or that conclusion isn't the right conclusion, because there's other ways you can handle or interpret these facts to come to a different conclusion, right? So once I heard even on the Hour of the Time that Bill mentioned that soon, and I thought he might have got the idea from his book, because the Einstein simple and the complex theory of relativity, you know, it could fall any day based on some of these ideas.
You're listening to WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA. Time for the next test, folks. Grab somebody and spin around the floor.
I saw her standing on the corner.
Look at that.
Look at that.
Young girl. Young girl. Young girl. I can't get you out of my mind. I took one look and I was fractured. I tried to run, but I was late.
What's your name? You better leave my daughter alone.
Well, I couldn't sleep a wink for trying to
Heal the wound.
Heal the what?
Heal the what?
That one started to get to me a little bit. I'm a little out of breath here. Call 1-888-403-2405. That's 1-888-403-2405. That's a lot of fun, folks. I hope you're having as much fun as I am. I'm dancing all over this studio.
It's just very good, very good. I better stick to this outline, you know, it's too far off here.
Which book were you talking about?
Oh, I was talking about the Last Skeptic of Science, the book Mensa tried to stop.
I've never read it.
Okay, well, what it is I believe he used to belong to Mensa, and because of the heat and the controversy over this book, that he's no longer a member.
Yeah, I heard that story. They kicked him out because of that book.
Was there a hand back there?
I remember they mentioned that Dutch roll, that maneuver, even out the absorption from radiation, from radiation energy. Could you demonstrate that for the yardstick or something? I had no discussion.
Oh, okay. Well, that's easy. And that brings to mind another point. I'll tell you what, I'll use that cup as a space cap. Yeah, that kind of looks like one, sort of, right? Okay, well, the Dutch roll was supposed to be that it turned on its axis like this. Like if that light was the sun and it's going to its destination, that it turned like this. Supposedly, so that this side would get heated from the sun, but it would roll over into the cold of space to dissipate the heat off and roll back into the heat, and that was the idea. Right. Okay, but here's an interesting fact about this, is that when something like this is in orbit, you know, when you watch the space shows on TV, they always show, you know, I'll get my Earth here. And I go, dun, 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 and the spaceship's going around like this, and it's always heading nose first around the Earth, right? Well, that would be true if the capsule was powered or being pushed to go around the Earth. But in reality, it's orbiting the Earth, and there's nothing pushing it. So instead of it going nose first, it would go this way, and the nose would still be aimed the same way it was going, and then it'd come back around this way backwards, and then go around like this, or it'd be at the whim of whatever force might happen to take it.
Nothing
can
change the inertia.
Right. See, that blows a lot of things away because they're talking about taking photographs and different experiments that they did, and it was dependent on that idea of doing that, but it couldn't have happened.
I think that's the same reason why you only see one side of the moon in orbit.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. That happens to be a subject on this, and it is something that is. Oh, brother. Okay, let me ask you. Okay, we have the Earth. What is it
that? Okay, the Earth.
The Earth and it's moving around the sun. But what do you suppose, or what do you think the common scientific idea is that turns the Earth like this as it's going around? I'm not sure the direction at this moment, but it's turning one way, and it's as it's going around. What do you suppose the common idea is? Any?
Oh, centrifugal force.
Well, centrifugal force might.
Centrifugal, not centrifugal.
Oh.
Centrifugal. T-R-I-P.
Okay. Are you referring from like the initial Big Bang they claim, and it's.
No, not that far back.
Okay, maybe I don't understand what that is. Can you explain?
Well, it's the force that keeps it turning like that because there's two orbits going on. One of the orbit around the sun, and this
right.
is another orbit that's going around this way.
Exactly.
On its axis.
What's causing that, though?
Right, you got me.
Okay, well, this is what they claim or what they believe it is. They believe after the initial Big Bang that, not that I agree with this, but you know, that's what they're claiming. The initial Big Bang, the centrifugal force, when it formed the planet over all these years, that initial motion is the same motion that's turning the Earth now. That's what they claim. But there's discrepancies in that, because since the invention of the atomic clock, that they know that sometimes it slows down and then speeds up. So what would account for the speeding up? Because see, over the millions of years, you would think it eventually goes slower, 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 right? But it's staying at the same speed and sometimes going faster.
There's an attraction somewhere.
Well, the scientists acknowledge that there's interaction between the oceans and the atmosphere. Okay, we were talking about the atmosphere. Okay, if they acknowledge an interaction, the interaction that they believe is that the Earth is turning, causing the seas to turn, and also causing the atmosphere to turn. But if you look at it through another way, or the opposite way of that, is that we know of the immense radiation in space, that this constant bombardment of radiation on the atmosphere is causing the atmosphere to turn, causing the oceans to turn, and that turns the Earth, not the other way around. And to prove this theory, because it's just a theory, is that moons that don't have any substantial atmosphere, they don't rotate. See? So there's some credibility to this, and it makes more sense because they can't explain the speeding up. Okay, now it gets to this thought. Okay, now suppose that this globe was the sun. Okay, the Earth would be about the size of a pea compared to this. How far away would that pea be from that sun?
Somewhere down the road.
Now you got it.
It'd
be exactly where the toilets are, about 215 feet. And it has like the radius. Oh, we have a hand back there again.
The heat that you were talking about, that's differential heat. As the Earth goes around in different portions of the year, different parts because of an axis, because there is an axis. It's generational heating that will generate that force.
Right, that's another good idea because, you know, it is off axis a little. And, you know, all these things that all.
Heating on the globe. It's not always at the same thing. So, as it goes through the most of the seasons, like that
generational
heating
will be
generating force.
Right. But you do see the logic where if it works one way, it can work the other way, and it's more reasonable it's working the unconventional way because the moon's not turning, and that also explains why it can speed up and slow down. Okay. All right, during this IGY year, the International Geophysical Year, there was a team of scientists under the direction of James A. Van Allen, is American physicist at the University of Iowa. Now, what they discovered is with the thing of this, well, maybe we can use the old platform again, Bill. Thank you, Bill.
You mean to tell me not one university has come up with this theory?
They all know.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
They're in on the fraud.
No, they're in on their job and their government grants, which they lose, but they don't perpetuate the fraud.
I mean, that world too big.
All about money.
Naive.
Naive.
About the money.
You can't buy everybody, but you can buy most people. And what you can't buy, you don't deal with. That's why they don't deal with us. And the rest of the world says, because the people who have positions don't deal with us, we have no credibility. See how it works?
Yeah.
Okay, these scientists during this geophysical year with the Vanguard satellite projects, what they did is they kept shooting up rockets and satellites with Geiger counters in them, and they discovered that there was this belt around the Earth here that was accredited to the James A. Van Allen, and that's why we know it was the Van Allen belt. Now, what this is it starts at 600 miles out from the globe here, and up to 25,000 miles, I have memory serves, 40,000 miles, that what is causing this is the radiation from the sun hitting the magnetic lines of force of the Earth. Is within those magnetic lines, it creates an ionized field of charged ions, and they attribute that to the Van Allen belt. And they call it a plasma, that a plasma is a charged particle. Now, one of the significant factors of plasma is that it has a very high conductivity of electricity. As a matter of fact, they say it's even better than copper. And so here we have around the Earth here, a giant metal band, that there's no difference between the conductivity of metal and plasma. So if you know anything about electricity and currents, when you have a current, you know, the left-hand rule, I believe they call it, wherever you have magnetism, motion, or electricity, you have a current. So there's many thousands of amperes flowing through the Van Allen belt, and they discovered that there's high radiation, and it wouldn't be a place I'd really want to go. You know what I mean?
Well, the shorter turn must have an effect somewhere. If you have a shorter turn on the transformer, there's a lot of heat generated.
That's true. But to get back,
this is why I warmed up there.
Well, this is at a higher level than what we were talking
about. That's it for today, folks. You only heard 1 hour of a 2-hour lecture, and that's all you're going to hear on this broadcast. Well, time for your next test. Grab your partner and let's do it.
Her name is Short Fat Fanny. One day when I was visiting that heartbreak hotel, that's where I met Fanny and she looked well. I told her that I love her, I never leave. She put her arm around me, gave me fever. She's my tootie booty, I love the child so. She walks me like a hound dog everywhere I go. Whenever I'm around, I'm on my P's and Q's. She might step on my blue. suede shoes on. And a honky tonk party just the other night. And I got jealous and started a fight. Because I was dancing with Mary Lou. I had to call Jim Dandy to the rescue. Saw Fat Fanny see my heart to die. Saw Fat Fanny put my soul on fire. On Monday we were married on Blueberry Hill. Now we so happy and I love her still. Step on my blue suede shoes. Well, at a honky tonk party just the other night. Santa got jealous and started a fight. Cause I was dancing with Mary Lou. I had to call Jim Dandy to the rescue. Saw that Santa in my heart to die. Got the kind of love that sets my soul on fire. Saw that Santa, well, I love her so. I'll never let Saw that Santa go.
Oh, yeah. Boy, this is a lot of fun, folks. You know, a month ago, I wouldn't be dancing around this studio. Call 1-888-403-2405. That's 1-888-403-2405. I thought I'd be out of breath a lot more than what I am, but I'm not, and that makes me very happy. How are you doing through this? The phones are open, 520-333-4578. That's 520-333-4578. And we can talk about anything you want. We can talk about what you've heard during this broadcast. I don't care. It's all right with me. What do you think about Ron Howell's presentation? You only heard the first hour of it. He did another hour, and it was just absolutely fantastic, and that was at our 1997 conference for members of our organizations. We have a conference every year. Haven't decided when or where this next year's conference is going to be. I'm not sure that anybody's going to be able to afford to come to it because of what's happened with the economic situation, not just here, but all around the world. 520-333-4578 is the number. And for those of you who haven't called yet to get your information pack on Dr. Wallach and his recommendations on how you can improve your health, call 1-888-403-2405. That's 1-888-403-2405. Did you hear anything tonight in that lecture that surprised you? I know a lot of people probably did. I know a lot of people who were at the conference did and really enjoyed Ron Howell. He's a pretty funny guy, and he's a real good guy. Good evening. You're on the air.
You have reached the harvest.
Uh-oh. Sorry, folks. I got to play some music while I go take the answering machine off the air. Be right back.
Somewhere up in New York way, where the people are so gay, twisting the night away. Here they have a lot of fun.
Okay, sorry about that, folks. I forgot to take the answering machine off the line before I did the broadcast. It's my fault. Whoever called, please call back. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, this is Tim in Virginia. You know, I just listened to the lecture.
Can you talk a lot louder, please?
Sure, I just listened. Lecture
that
your friend gave, and what's interesting is that just today on the radio, I heard, I forget what station it was, they were talking about the Van Allen belt, and they were saying that they found some new facts out that this radiation belt, they found that there are times they believe that the radiation can change within a split second, I forget the reason, to such an incredibly, such an incredible intensity of radiation that you would need
You see, I've been saying this for years on this broadcast. That's exactly what James Van Allen said when he discovered the Van Allen belt. And people have been calling me a liar for years. And now they're finally coming out and admitting it. You know why that's happening now? Because some satellites have been fried by the Van Allen belt and went out of service. And all of these Looney Tune UFO nuts have been saying it's because of extraterrestrials did it. Our NASA did it so we wouldn't find out what's really out there and all of this crazy stuff. It was the Van Allen belt. Just fried them.
And the other thing that this broadcast said was people will say, well, what about the shuttle, things like this? And they said the shuttle is operating about 300 or 400 miles above the Earth, so it's not within this Van
That's correct.
Allen belt. But that it just mentioned that if you went to the moon, you would most certainly go through it.
Yes, and you would be fried.
So... I've talked about this before, but I heard that today, and then on your station you bring this up, and it's just amazing synchronicity there.
Yeah, isn't it? You know, there's something in the Bible that says all things secret will be made known, or some paraphrasing. I don't remember the exact quote, but it says that someday all of the secret things will not be secret anymore. And it looks, you know, that's happening. That's really happening. I like that.
Well, thank you again, and I'll let someone else call, and thank you for your show.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
I think it's incredible. But they have to admit it because the companies that put these satellites up and run them are finding out that they got fried by the Van Allen belt. And so NASA can't lie about it anymore. Not only that, you know, they're finding out about the thermosphere. And... that was so funny at the conference when he explained to everybody what the thermosphere was reading right out of the textbooks of, you know, what it was. You know, those were the last textbooks where they ever published that stuff, and they don't use them anymore. They lie to the students in the classes. It's incredible. And then, you know, he read it right out of the textbook that the thermosphere goes up to several thousand degrees, several thousand degrees, several thousand degrees. And then in another part of the book, it explains the Bessemer steel process. And we're talking about this little bitty dinky spacecraft made out of aluminum. And that's, it's too funny for words. 520-333-4578 is the number. And we'll talk about whatever you want. What did you think about what you heard? What did you think about what Ron Howell was discussing? Have you done any real investigation, or are you one of these people who just watch and believe and never question? Were you watching when they... when they showed the astronauts on the moon in a vacuum with no atmosphere, and all of a sudden the flags started fluttering in the breeze? Did you see that? I saw it. I've got the tape. I've got the official NASA tape that shows it. They're standing there doing around, you know, doing their thing, hopping around, and all of a sudden you see a little breeze hits the flag. And it starts fluttering in the breeze. It was incredible. Apparently, I guess somebody opened the door to the hangar where they were filming these things in the Nevada desert. And a little breeze blew through and fluttered the flag. Boy, that is, you show that to people, and I'm telling you, they almost fall out of their chair. It is incredible. It's incredibly funny, too. 520-333-4578. For those of you who have not called yet to get your information pack on Dr. Wallach and his recommendations on how you can improve your health, call 1-888-403-2405. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Cooper.
Hello.
I heard the man giving a lecture, and I was reminded of that book that you had on... NASA Moon to America?
Yes.
I read that, and as he was speaking, what I remember from that book unfolded and what you've said before about the spaceships and so forth. And I'm wondering, just what is there to celebrate about our business in space anyway? Because so much of the stuff seems to be nothing but baloney.
It's the biggest hoax in history.
No kidding.
Nope.
And I also read the book Forbidden Archaeology, too.
Uh-huh.
And that some of that I've heard over the years, but it's even in a sort of concentrated form. I'll tell you, there's so many, so much flim-flam going on about history and science. It's amazing. It's almost comical in some ways it is.
Yes, it is.
And also, I like your taste in music, too.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, if you lived here, you could hear that 24 hours a day for months and never hear the same song twice. And it's all the greatest classics you heard it.
Well, we got some pretty good oldies stations out here, too, but they're all in the college ones, but they're pretty good ones.
I bet you they don't go for months without hearing the same tune.
No, you're right there. You're certainly right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Welcome. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I thought I'd give you a little taste of what people around here listen to without commercials. 24 hours a day. The best music ever. 520-333-4578. What are your views on the space program? What are your opinions on what you heard tonight in Ron Howell's lecture? I can remember when I first began to discover that something was wrong with what NASA was telling us. And I started going through official NASA publications, and it's worse than you think, folks. They tell us that that Mars has a very thin atmosphere, very, very, you know, small atmosphere, and it's not very thick at all. I think it's like 1/6 the atmosphere of Earth's or something like that. Now, don't quote that figure because I'm taking it off the top of my head, and I'm probably wrong. But it's something like that. And in one of the NASA publications, I saw their plan to build a Mars airplane. They were going to send this airplane on a rocket to Mars, and when it got to Mars, it was going to pop out of the rocket and unfold and fly in the atmosphere. Absolutely impossible, unless they made it about 25 times bigger than a 747. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, good evening. My name's William, calling you from Indianapolis.
Hi, William.
I got a question for you.
Sure.
Have there been any telltale signs on any of the, back during the Mars production when we sent the rover there, anything to look for on the pictures that were sent back, any telltale signs like you described, the fluttering flag in the breeze?
No, I was so disgusted with the Apollo space programs that I didn't even watch it.
Yeah.
I knew it was fake before it went.
My follow-up question is, what is the purpose for all this, for them to perpetrate this type of fraud on us?
Read the report from Iron Mountain. It's all in there. And if anybody tells you that it's a fraud and somebody just wrote it as a joke or something, read it again and then laugh in his face, because if you've got any brains at all, when you read the report from Iron Mountain that was written way back in the 60s, around 1966, and see that everything in there has been implemented to work against us, then there's no possible way that a reasonable person, after reading that book, could believe that it was some kind of a hoax or a fake.
Right. Who was the author on that book?
I have no idea. There are several people who claim to have been the author. I don't believe any of them, to tell you the truth. It was a report written after a series of meetings held in Iron Mountain, which is a secure atomic bomb-proof, what they call a hard site cave in a mountain where large corporations rent space to store their valuable documents. During the Cold War, that was some kind of a concern with a lot of people, that if there was an atomic attack, they would lose all their records. So they stored them in this place called Iron Mountain. This secret committee, appointed by the president, met there and discussed the probability and possibility of permanent peace and what they would have to do to have it. They would have to create world government. They would have to create monumental, wasteful programs such as NASA and a space program that wouldn't produce anything but would deviate the attention of the public and use up large sums of money and employ lots and lots and lots of people, and all of these kinds of things. And that's just one of the little things. And And they would have to create an enemy external to this Earth. And some of the more difficult to explain UFO sightings might be experiments along these lines, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yes. It's the old Hegelian thing, you know.
Sure.
Keep the fools occupied while you're robbing them blind and enslaving them and everything else, you know.
Well, thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
I'll research that book out.
Yes, please. Everybody in this world should read the report from Iron Mountain, The Possibility and Probability of Permanent Peace.
All right. Good night.
Thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for another test, folks. Come on, get up off the couch. Here we go. Oops, here we go.
Let me tell you about a place somewhere up in New York way, where the people are so gay, twisting the night away. Here they have a lot of fun, putting trouble on the run. Man, you find the hole in yarn, twisting the night away. Yeah, twisting, twisting.
The incomparable Sam Cooke. The number's 520-333-4578.
Here's a man in evening clothes. How he got here, I don't know. Man, you want to see him go, twisting the night away. Dancing with the chicken flat. She's moving up and back. Oh man, there ain't nothing like twisting the night away. Yeah, twisting, twisting. Everybody's feeling great. They're twisting, twisting. Yeah, twisting the night. Let's twist the night. With an older queen who's dolled up in a diamond ring that's twisting the night away. Man, you ought to see her go twisting to the rock and roll. Here you find the young and old twisting the night away. Yeah, twisting, twisting, man. Everybody's feeling great. They're twisting, twisting, they're twisting the night.
Good evening, you're on the air.
Yes, Bill, I seem to recall hearing James Collier, who made the video about NASA scamming us about going to the moon.
Uh-huh.
I recall him saying that nearly all the actual documented footage, the videotape footage of the Apollo astronauts walking on the moon and playing around with their little rover car had been destroyed.
I don't know if it's been destroyed anymore, but you can't get it now.
Yeah, there was something to the effect that it has been, yeah, that all that actual documentation, you can't get your hands on it, you can't see it.
No, you can't. And they recatalog the photographs so that when you go looking for a particular photograph, you can't find them anymore either.
That is a real shame because, you know, it's almost as if Hollywood is rewriting history. We've recently had a couple of Hollywood, big Hollywood productions about the Apollo moon missions by Ron Howard and Tom Hanks.
Yeah, they're trying to undo the damage done by me and Mr. Collier and Renee and a whole bunch of other people who have discovered this scam and have made it public on a large, large scale. William Jefferson Clinton didn't call me the most dangerous radio talk show host in America for nothing.
You know, anybody who's thinking should see red flags all over the place. And I really, you know, it's a sham because the real historical facts lie in the footage of the Apollo mission itself. And if all that footage has been buried or destroyed or whatever, then people should really start wondering what the heck's going on here.
You give me all that footage and 2 months in an editing studio, and I'll produce a video that will just absolutely bring NASA to its knees.
Right. I'm sure that's why they've footage.
Yeah.
And they've got the spinmeisters like Tom Hanks and Ron Howard with their big pompous Hollywood productions that are just bamboozling the American public.
Yeah, but Ron Howard and the other guy,
Hanks.
Tom Hanks, Mr. Big, I'm not making any aspersions on his character or anything. What I'm going to say is that they're sheeple. They think they're doing a neat thing for the country.
Well, it's almost like they're putting a feather in their cap.
They don't have a clue. Yeah, they don't have a clue. They're riding on this thing, see? And they think that we really went to the moon, and that they're doing a great thing by making these movies.
You wonder if they've ever even looked at any of the contrary evidence, you know, or if they just buy the company line. Why in the heck haven't we gone further than 300 miles from the surface of the Earth in, 27 years?
Because we can't. The human beings can't. You can send hardware beyond there.
Yeah, so it really stinks, and I agree with you, Bill, that I don't think we ever walked on the moon.
Well, we didn't.
Okay, take care, Bill.
Well, at least, let me qualify that. We didn't, at least in the Apollo space program.
Do you think there's a secret program that they may have used?
I know there's a secret space program. I documented it. I read the documents and sourced them and gave them out on this broadcast years ago. I know there's a secret military space program. I know that there's a secret technology that's at least 50 to 100 years ahead of anything that the public has any conception of. I've seen this stuff flying out in the desert of Nevada and other places. It's real. It's not extraterrestrial. It's not back engineered from some crashed alien spacecraft. It belongs to us. And the first bits of that technology was developed by the Germans in their secret weapons projects and programs during World War II.
What do you think the motivation to keep all this technology secret? Why do they keep it secret?
To herd the sheeple.
That's right.
It's to herd the sheeple.
Okay, Bill. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you for your call. Read the report from Iron Mountain, folks. If you read that and you call me up and tell me that it's a hoax or it's some kind of fake, then I've got to say that you've got to screw loose. You've got to read it. You've got to find it. No matter what it takes, you've got to dig it up and find it, and you've got to read it. You must read it. 520-333-4578 is the great big number for you to call. And give your opinion of what you heard tonight. What do you think about it? You don't have to agree. I know there's a lot of people that no matter what kind of proof you show them, they're going to believe that we went to the moon in the Apollo space program till the day they die and afterward, and there's nothing in the world that we can do to change their minds because for some reason they're stuck in that mold and they won't budge from it. And I don't care if they don't budge from it. You know, my purpose is to awaken those who will be awakened and not, you know, disturb the rest of the sheeple. I really don't want to hurt anybody. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, Bill. This is Dave calling from Florida.
Hi, Dave.
And I was listening to your show, and I was listening to your tapes tonight. And I believe I wrote you a letter about Kwajalein, where we saw a UFO, you know.
Yes, you did. I just read it just a few days ago, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, and that's reliable, and I could mail you the names of the APs. I'm not going to burn up your airtime, but I was just studying for an extra class license. And this Iron Mountain is right in the National Radio Quiet Zone, which extends in Virginia, part of West Virginia.
Yeah, that's where Mount Weather is also.
Right, and the excuse they use, it's a Radio Astronomy Observatory, and you're restricted on certain radio frequencies there.
Well, it could be. That could be part of the reason, but the major reason is because of the major underground installations and the government in waiting in Mount Weather, ready to assume command if there's a national catastrophe or disaster of some kind, like atomic attack or economic collapse or uprising of the citizenry, things like that.
Right. It's a pretty scary thing to think about. Well, I won't keep you on burn up your air time, but it's a good show tonight. I enjoy it very much.
You know, you're a merchant marine seaman, aren't you?
Yes. Retired.
Did you hear my broadcast the other night about the ships that...
I was going to call you, but I was kind of scared.
Well, don't be scared. What do you know about that?
Well, I busted Delta Line, the last American passenger ship line. I got on the a Delta Line ship, and we were running to South America, and the first engineer had a 1,500-watt ham radio and an advanced class license, and he didn't know what he was doing, and he cut off the crew's entertainment antenna, and I had my little 10-watt QRP rig, and the crew on the ship, the first captain let me use it, a Norwegian, good guy, but he was, I put two and two together. The second captain, the bosun, had the captain order me not to use my little radio to make phone patches, but let the first engineer use it, and I caught him using it in Peru. And every time we hit Philadelphia, we're carrying a reefer cargo of fruit up that's refrigerated. And every time we hit Philadelphia, there was no customs, and the fruit's going off. And the crew was, I had a few near accidents, and they drove me off the ship after they tried to kill me by dropping something on me. And I went to a Wall Street AA meeting, and I told what happened to me. I was kind of upset. And a man came up to me, and he wasn't from U.S. Customs, but the American Bureau of Shipping, which is an agency for Lloyd's of London, which insures all merchant ships. They're the underwriters.
Uh-huh.
And I told him the name of the ship, and we only use first names in AA. And what the problem was, what happened, how they're doing it. And a few, the next trip, they busted a bunch of customs officers and a bunch of my union officials, and they nailed $15 million in cocaine coming off in the fruit. Lloyd's of London jacked up the insurance so much, that's the reason Delta Line is out of business.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And they had one other incident, I'll just keep it brief. I was running to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, sea train ship, we were the supply ship, and there was Jamaicans employed on the beach. The bosun on the ship was a Jamaican, and my watch partner, an old seaman, last trip, we spotted a Honduran. You know, Americans should have these jobs. And I overheard that he was ashore. He was going to meet the ship in Norfolk. I spotted him on the dock, and I pointed him out. And they reversed he tipped off customs, and they nailed it. It was the cocaine. They didn't catch the cocaine, but they cut it off. And somebody in the Navy had to be in on it. The Jamaicans with someone in the Navy for bringing that into New York. And this is the thing about customs. They nailed me and strip searched me real bad. But sitting in the crew lounge were a few Italians in suits from the New York families. Do you get what I mean?
Oh, yes. I understand perfectly.
It's an independent Jamaican operation.
Uh-huh.
And I knew a girl in New York whose father was an airframe and power plant mechanic at Kennedy. And these incoming flights, he would pull out packs. I don't know what these are. They're in the wings. I have to change them. And he would see packages of drugs.
In the wing.
In the wings. You know, these international flights.
Uh-huh.
He would put in a new pack right over them, and he wouldn't dare say a thing. He was in fear for his life.
Sure. Well, thank you very much, my friend.
Okay. God bless you, Bill.
God bless you, too.
Okay. Bye.
Well, time for another test, folks. Get on it. Oh, and have fun doing it, too.
Do you want it there?
Yeah!
Well, you know you make me wanna kick my heels up and down.
You're listening to Radio Teen on the Armed Forces Radio Network, Japan. It's the Mad Lad. This Saturday, there'll be a dance contest at the Teen Club at the Grant Heights housing area.
Now, wait a minute.
Yeah, wait a minute. Good evening, you're on the air.
Mr. Cooper.
Yes, sir. Banks are collapsing all over the world, yes.
See, what I'm asking, I've been working a lot of doubles, and I'll try to catch your program when I get off, but I missed it today, tonight. But I was wondering, did another bank collapse? Yesterday, one is today, our day?
I don't know if one collapsed today, but I know that they're collapsing all over the place. And several banks in Japan have collapsed, yes.
Catch you on time, see if you talked about it.
Almost every bank in Russia has collapsed.
Yeah.
Banks in Indonesia have collapsed. In fact, the government is on the verge of collapsing.
And everything's getting rough.
Everything's getting really bad. The Communist News Networks are still telling us that everything's okay.
Oh, yeah.
That
the
retail sales for Christmas are out of sight. Just fantastic. The retailers are so happy because everybody is... And it's a lie. You know how I know it's a lie?
How's that, sir?
Because if you were watching the stock market, the stock for Mattel Toy Company
yes.
fell drastically. Guess why?
I know our news up here, I catch up 5 o'clock in the morning when I get up to go to work.
Yeah, guess why?
And they were talking about it.
Mattel Toys, yeah.
The fourth quarter is real bad.
Yeah, all the retailers canceled their orders for toys for Christmas sales because nobody is buying anything.
I didn't catch one thing, your prediction on our collapse.
Yeah.
Missed it Tuesday, you were talking about.
Order the tape.
Okay.
Because I'm not going to repeat that broadcast now.
All right.
Okay?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
520-333-4578. Isn't it incredible, folks? Mattel Toys, their stock dropped. The CEO said they're going to lose over $350 million this year from their projected profits that they thought they were going to make because all of the retailers, the toy outlets, the toy stores, the department stores have canceled their orders. They canceled their orders right at Thanksgiving. Canceled all their orders for Christmas sales. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, Dale. This is Blair Ingram in SNL, North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
If you would explain a little bit more about the radio station, I want to help.
The radio station? What do you mean?
I'm sorry, the TV station.
Oh, well, we're going to build a TV station right here. And we're gonna broadcast television to the Round Valley. We're also going to put our programming on satellite so that other television stations around the country can broadcast it. And we're going to do one other thing, too.
Okay.
We're going to make tapes available at cost for anybody who will take those tapes and play them in their cable access channel where they live on a regularly scheduled basis.
Okay. Now, I want to make real sure, is it the zip code 89525?
No, it's 85925. It's the hour of the time in care of 98.5 FM, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925, USA.
85925.
That's correct. One more time. The hour of the time in care of 98.5 FM, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925, USA.
A-R, okay. Okay, I've got it. Thanks, Bill.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling. Well, you know, I've enjoyed this broadcast tonight. We've got time for maybe one more call if anybody wants to call in. And by the way, we need $15,000 to make this television project work. We've got almost everything we need except this last bit. And we had a donation page on the website for a while, but sort of petered out. Nobody was donating. So we just decided to stir that. We've got to do this project, folks. People don't believe anything unless they see it on television. So we've got to do this. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, Bill. This is Greg from Texas.
Hi, Greg.
Do you play requests?
If you'll give me a request, I'll see if I can have it for you tomorrow.
Do you have a Crystal Blue Persuasion by Tommy James and the Shondells?
Absolutely.
Have you ever listened to the words of that?
I probably did at one time, but I don't remember what they are now.
Well, ever since you pointed out Imagine to me, kind of listen closer to the lyrics.
Uh-huh.
And you should listen to the lyrics of that song. I really couldn't do it justice just telling you about it.
Oh, there's a lot of songs with some real deep meaning and some good and some very bad.
Well, this seems to be another...
another Imagine type thing?
Another Imagine type.
Okay.
Have you seen the movie Intruders?
No, I haven't. What's it about?
It's about alien abduction. It's based on Bud Hopkins' book.
Yeah, Bud Hopkins is a CIA operative.
Yeah, I remember. I think I read that in your book.
Yeah, Dr. Kurzweil in New York was recruited by him to help monitor the victims of these mind control operations. And Dr. Kurzweil didn't like what was happening to these people. So he blew the whistle, and the establishment went after him, tried to take his medical license away.
I didn't know that.
Simply because he blew the whistle on Bud Hopkins. Yeah, it's all documented in the appendix of my book, Behold a Pale Horse.
Well, if you want
there's two abduction cases in the movie, and one of them, she claims that they always come, they're in a telephone truck, and when they show it in the movie, it's definitely humans getting out of a truck.
Yeah.
And it's never aliens that come into her house until...
I know, it's like Fire in the Sky in a spaceship, you saw all these alien suits and masks.
Right.
They're just laughing at everybody. Yeah, listen, we're out of time, and I hate to cut you off, but we got to go.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you for calling. Well, folks, that's it. We'll see you again tomorrow night. Good night, and God bless each and every single one of you.
See you later, alligator.
Well, I saw my baby walking. And the other man today. Well, I saw my baby walking.
Listening to 98. You're listening now to 98.5 FM. We now return you to All Oldies Most of the Time.